Willie and D-Mace rolling along on a Wednesday here on 102.5 The Game. We're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We're talking with Jonathan Hutton. Second day of Titans training camp in the pads. We were all out there this morning. We've heard Jeffrey Simmons address the media after what happened in the first day, which was not a great day for him. Much better reaction today. Jonathan Hutton is with Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. He joins us every Wednesday here on the show. We talk mostly Titans, but we might slip in a little University of Tennessee here and there or some other issues. But, Hutt, first of all, give me your reaction. You were at practice today of how Jeffrey Simmons handled the situation.
I thought today Simmons was a leader. Quite frankly, I didn't expect him to speak, Willie. And I
think we were all wondering that when we got to practice, because it wasn't for sure whether he was going to or not, right?
If you were going to bet, how would you have placed your money? I would have said no.
Well, that was kind of the scuttlebutt when I arrived, is it wasn't on the schedule. And so we were like, is he going to do that? Now, I did bump into our colleague, Buck, and he did tell me that he had spoke to him. So I was like, okay, that's good. That's the good first step. And now the next thing, I was thinking to myself, and when we were all chatting about it, I mean, we're all over there gossiping, like we always do while we're watching the plays. You know, we're all saying it would be the right thing for him to do, to address it, and then not let it fester and move forward. And so it wasn't clear. We were all wondering if he was going to do it. So once he did, I was very happy that he handled it that way.
Yeah, it was the opposite of how he handled yesterday, I felt like. And he spent about 10 minutes prior to practice with Buck speaking off to the side. So, I mean, I was joking that if he didn't speak, because Callahan isn't scheduled to go, didn't speak today, that Buck would have to, you know, hold his own press conference and let us know what what Big Jeff said to him. Look, I get the reaction. I don't agree with anything that Simmons did yesterday, especially with what he said with Buck coming on and over the air. I think anybody in radio can certainly understand what we're saying there. I will say though, the reaction, Willie and Mace, to, oh, this is unprecedented, we haven't seen anything like this, how quickly we have just dismissed the Pac-Man Jones era, where, I mean, Jim Wyatt moved his family out of his house and put them in a hotel because he thought Pac was coming to his home. Frank Wycheck was threatened by Pac-Man Jones in front of Jeff Fisher holding court outside of the team locker room. He refused to donate to the bonus money that players give to the equipment guys and went off on Haas one day. And Kevin Mawai had to get in the middle of it. I mean, the sagas with Adam Pac-Man Jones are way beyond anything that we would have seen yesterday. I don't know if you guys are with me on there or not, but What happened with Jeffrey Simmons is not unprecedented in the NFL.
Not unprecedented at all. Now, the one distinction I would make, Pac-Man Jones got off on the wrong foot from the very, very start and was never even close to becoming a guy that would be considered as a leader of the team. That's what, to me, set this apart for Jeffrey Simmons, because I do think that may be what hit him yesterday, maybe when he went home and said, okay, look, if I'm supposed to be the leader, I have to change. I can't just do what maybe I could do years ago, right? Because it is going to be looked upon differently when you are the guy that there's a lot more expected. We set the bar pretty low with Pac-Man from the very start because he started off with issues and never ended, right?
No doubt.
And listen, for people that don't know Pac-Man Jones, I got to give the guy credit because when he left, when he got suspended for a full year – and then was cast off to the Cowboys. We were laughing. We're like, good luck, Cowboys. Have fun with this guy, right? But he played for, 12 years in the league?
Yes, yes.
So he got it together. So there's hope for anybody if Pac-Man could turn it around, because I thought there was no hope for that guy.
Yeah. Well, and let me go back to Simmons for a minute. So just because he's anointed the leader, to me, doesn't mean he's going to change the way he is the way he's the just made, the mechanisms that is Big Jeff. It's no surprise that he's in the middle of a scrum fight, brawl, whatever you want to call it. He would have done that last year, the year prior, you know, that's what he does. And it's not the first time that he's popped off at the media. I mean, I thought that he was reacting to something from a couple of weeks ago, whenever, I think it was last week, he was asked about social media and he said he was done with it. I thought that it was going back that far, because it's not the first time we've seen something like this. I mean, guys nowadays are reading a lot more of their press clippings, to sound old school, than what they were, 10, 15 years ago, because it's literally tagged to them, or it's a screenshot where I believe his mom is sending him something right after practice. I mean, it's a different era than the Pac-Man era, but it's not unprecedented.
We're talking with Jonathan Hutton and Withrow, Hot Mike. I think the problem is with this, you're right, this is not something that, you know, we haven't seen, or at least me, I haven't been, you know, privy to or a part of. So from that respect, yeah, I mean, it happens, but I think it's because
you never saw this, Mace?
No, what I'm saying is I've seen this before. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
my years playing, I've seen,
gotcha,
you know, guys go off on the media and whatnot.
Yeah.
But like Willie said, what makes it different here is that 2 days ago or a week ago, your GM came out and he said all these glowing things about
right.
you. And then all of a sudden, when
he's
you
knighted.
Get that opportunity to you know, make do on what your GM and what your head coach said, you choose to make it about you rather than the team. Again, like I said yesterday, it probably was just a bad day. So I'm not going to hold Jeffrey to it his whole career. But what he has to do right. now moving forward is, because everybody's watching him. And I said the greatest mistake he made yesterday was doing that, not just the children, but doing that while his teammate is sitting in the middle. His young teammate is sitting in the middle of this. And his teammate is like, what do should I leave? Should I continue with dinner? You just put your guy in a bad position. But again, he came back the next day. He addressed it. And I don't expect anything, you know, moving forward from Jeffrey Simmons as far as what we saw yesterday.
That's what he said today. I mean, I think it's a good sign that he spoke to the media today. I really do. Because I don't think Jeffrey Simmons wanted to, you know, like, I think he's still pissed off for greatness, as Chad and I would say. so I lean towards the fact that he did what was necessary and said what he needed to say. But I mean, he's still going to be reading every time his name's mentioned. I mean, it's just what guys do now.
He kind of admitted what gets said, and he put some of his teammates in the mix, and because I think it's true, but he said some of the stuff that gets said bothers us. He said us, but he's really meaning him.
And we'll still bring it to you guys, which is fine.
Yeah.
I don't think that type of dialogue is awful as long as, we're not on air. You know what
right.
I mean?
Now,
we've seen a lot behind the scenes. That was just amazing.
Right, there's a way to do it behind the scenes.
No doubt. No doubt. And that was what was, that's what was just something that just can't, no one can condone that based on just everything that's involved with the radio show and of course with the team and rights and everything else.
Now, what did you see out there, Hutt, that was encouraging to you today? Because today seemed like it was a little bit tapered down compared to yesterday.
Yeah.
But today it seemed like it was a little bit tapered down. The offense did some good things, and the defense, for the most part, while I was there, it seemed like the offense got the best of the defense majority of the time. There were times where, you know, they got into the quarterback's face. But what did you see in regards to both the offense and the defense today?
Well, I saw you and Willie, which is
yes.
great. You think I've been on the coast of beachside or something?
Yeah, man, it looked like you came from the beach, man. You had the tan going and everything.
Just been outside, man. Just been outside. Hey, let me. I made notes because I knew we were going to discuss this. Mm-hmm. Treylon Burks, good practice.
Mm-hmm.
let's string some together. I want him mentioned as a consistent player, like we would see from, you know, anyone from Pollard to Ridley, you know, like it just have his name mentioned. And I thought Jaquan Jackson, the rookie, with a 20-yard gain, at least from my vantage point, you guys were closer to the catch. Throw from Levis, where he scooped it up when Levis was facing some pressure. And I noted him as a good portion of the offense. Judy Lolley, I was told to keep an eye on him. He's aggressive. He's hard to juke, and I like just his mentality at the corner spot. And I'll also point out Tyler Boyd. I was impressed with some of the catches he made during 1-on-1 and 7-on-7. Here's my issue, guys. This team right now does not have a right tackle. They're putting a lot of faith into Nicholas Petitfrere whenever he returns, because everyone from Njoku to Watson, Rupsich, anyone that wanted to try their hand on the outside today on the right side, I didn't think, at least in the passing portions of practice, nothing that I saw was anything to say, okay, this guy's got a chance to keep Will Levis healthy for the duration of the season. He was facing some constant heat off that right side. And I say the sooner the better for Nicholas Petitfrere if you're looking for Will Levis to get some protection on the right.
Yeah, you're going to have to, because that I did notice too, that right side.
Good. They did well in the run game, though.
Yeah, but it's been the pass game for the last two seasons.
No doubt.
It hasn't necessarily been the run game, because Derrick Henry has gotten the yardage. But when you have to, you know, get back underneath center, take those drops, or you're in shotgun and that offensive line isn't holding up, well, we're starting to sort of see the same things on that right side. Where they're not holding up. But one guy that is popping to me is J.C. Latham.
Yeah, man.
I'm talking about
I'm glad you mentioned him.
I was standing with Brad Hopkins, and it's good to always stand with an offensive lineman when you're watching an offensive lineman. And we just got to talking about, you know, his massive build. But this is one thing Brad noticed, too. It's like, man, this dude doesn't wear any gloves. Normally you see offensive linemen wear gloves. He said, man, that dude's a bear. That's what he is. He said, guys that don't wear gloves and all that other stuff, something's wrong with them. Something's wrong. They're ready to get down and dirty. They are bear-like in what they want to. They want to grab you and maul you. And that's what I think as he started to learn his offense, there was a mistake he made, but then he turned back around and he looked at Bill, and I guess Bill was, you know, telling him what he needed to do, but he recognized that he made that mistake very quickly. I think this kid – I have truly high hopes. I think he could be right in the line with the Brad Hopkins, those guys that played on that left side. I think he could be the next guy.
Mace, he's not just a bear. He's a grizzly, you know?
Yes.
Like, yeah, he gets after it, man. His work ethic is what stands out to me. Mm-hmm. He is, you know, you mentioned, you know, some practice habits and what you want to see. We discussed that with a topic that was on Stillman's show, right? And the consistency and how certain guys, depending on what's asked of them, they may or may not get a breather. This guy does not do that. And, you know, there's a thunderstorm coming through, last week or over the weekend, and he's out hitting the sled next to Lake Amulet or whatever it's called. I have high hopes as well. He looked good. And, let me also point out, I thought Tyler Boyd, leads by example, and you can tell the benefit of having someone, D-Mace, who knows this offense very well. I notice him constantly whenever he's not in, helping the others with all the motion. There's a lot of motion with this offense, and it's specifically helping the quarterbacks too. I think he can be a huge benefit to Will Levis.
Yeah, well, he's going to have to be, because they're counting on him and his play to sort of elevate Peter Skoronski in his play.
Yeah.
I think what hampered Peter last year, not just the injury early with that, he had the epidemic, I believe I'm pronouncing it right, But he didn't have anyone to his right or his left that could really play. I think now that he has somebody to his left, which is Cushenberry at center, and it seems like he has somebody to his right, which is J.C. Latham at tackle, this guy is going to be a much better guard in what Bill Callahan wants him to do.
Hey, let me point out one more, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. Malik Willis.
Mm-hmm.
What a difference I have seen in him. And this is one practice today. He was pointed out by Callahan after the practice on Saturday. He apparently had a good day yesterday. I like what I've seen, especially on the boots with him, and he's stepping up in the pocket. We didn't see that previous. He's stepping up in the pocket, and he's letting it fly. He's completed a couple of passes over the middle today that I had to do a double take to see, is that Willis in at quarterback? Because I wasn't used to seeing that with him in a Titans uniform. I see a much more confident player and a guy that it seems, even though he's having to learn the new offense, it seems as though things are slowing down for him a bit, which is great. It doesn't look like his head's spinning.
Well, it shouldn't be, and hopefully it's not, because, you know, he's going to need this camp to really solidify, and I mean Willis, solidify his spot on this roster. It's good that they keep three quarterbacks.
I'm still going to believe it when I see it kind of mold.
I agree. I agree with
But he does look, I mean, you got to admit, he does look different. From
what he did the prior two seasons.
Yeah. So, you know, only time will tell once we start to get into games, and then we really recognize whether he has sort of made that bump up that he need to make. Because obviously he's not a starter, but you want to be at least a backup or that third guy. And the way he had been playing the prior two seasons, we didn't know if he could hold on to that third spot as the third receiver, meaning third quarterback or not. So it's good to see him sort of get into his rhythm and look a little bit different than what he has the last couple of years.
What do you guys think of Levis?
I think Levis, he has some good and he has some bad. I think he learns very quickly from his mistakes. I do. But there's still a lot he has to learn within the offense and what they want him to do, because it's not the same offense he was underneath in last year. If this was the same offense he was in last year, then I would expect him to be further. But because it's not, I think he's sort of right where they probably want him to be, with the thought of, okay, we're going to start putting more on him and he's going to be able to expand.
Yeah, I ask you about him because I went down to the O-line, D-line drills whenever you guys were watching 7-on-7, and I didn't get to see much of him specifically. When I did, there's a different presence with him in the huddle than there is with Mason Rudolph. And again, that's expected, but that's also a plus at this point when you're picking up a new offense. He's used to this, though, man. Mm-hmm. I mean – different offensive coordinator, what, every year since high school?
Yeah.
Or learning a new system practically every year since high school. I mean, it's similar to what he had in 2022 at Kentucky, or 2021 when he had the breakout year with the Rams OC.
Yeah, so hopefully he can continue to get better as he learns this offense. Let's quickly switch it. This is a question I want to ask you. And Willie brought it up to me, and I was going to bring it up to Willie. But he beat me to the punch, bringing it up to me.
Okay.
The whole Texas and UT thing. When I saw it, I think I texted the guys like, man, you Texas fans, they are going to be upset that they are now referred to as Tex and not UT. Who decides that? I mean, should you Texas fans just continue to say UT, or should they sort of, okay, we are in our conference, so if we're in the conference, we got to sort of abide by the conference rules. We are now considered University of Texas. That doesn't sound right, Hutt. It doesn't sound right, not one bit.
You know what? This has the making of a great annual rivalry.
Yes, and that's what I thought, too.
Where the loser loses the ability to use UT.
Absolutely.
The winner gets UT for the year. I think, I mean, that's a – and you come up with some
trophy or something.
to reference that. Yeah, I mean, I would love that. I can't wait until they play. But yeah, I mean, Tavondre Sweat, I don't know if you guys seen the chat with him and Mike Keith whenever he was coming in for rookie minicamp. If you haven't, go check that out, because it was UT versus UT. And Sweat is not happy with the fact that there's another UT in the mix that will not bow down to the almighty University of Texas. It's funny. It's all in jest, but at the same time, there's a football rivalry there that Tavondre Sweat certainly has played in, and he certainly backs up. So I'm eager to know what his reaction is whenever he sees the TEX instead of the UT.
Well, just think about where this is going to go. The Texas fans have to change their habits, because if let's say they had a great 3-point shooting day for basketball, instead of saying, "Nice shooting, UT," this is what they would have to do.
Okay, all right. Nice shooting, Tex.
Remember Ghostbusters? Anytime you say Tex, all I can think about is Bill Murray and Ghostbusters. Oh, nice shooting, Tex.
Oh, man.
The Tex horn.
Tex is a guy, right? It's not a school.
It's not a school. It's a guy.
It's like your buddy Tex. Yeah. Like the big guy. Tex.
Was it Tex Winner for the Bulls?
Yes.
Randall Tex Cobb. He's from Tennessee. Yeah, remember old Randall Tex Cobb, the boxer? Got beat the heck out of Larry
Tex
Holmes. Beat him up.
Oh, man. Used often enough. Yeah. Texas has gone by the wayside. It needs to bring back, and Texas is going to do that for us.
Oh, well, Texas fans, I know y'all didn't take kindly to being referred to now, since you've now joined the SEC, as Tex, University of Tex.
Oh, hey, what
Texas A&M's got to be laughing at
too.
Oh, they love
it. Hey, Tex.
Troll them.
Imagine for a second if it was reversed, guys. If Tennessee was TNN,
man.
The reaction here,
it would be a topic
across the state.
Would it not? That would be a huge topic, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would. I mean, there'd be protests outside of the Birmingham offices. Will it? You kidding me? You think Philip Fulmer was avoiding the state of Alabama? Tennessee fans would be going down there, trying to make sure that the media guides were changed.
All right, Hutt, before we let you go, I got one more for you.
Okay.
You mentioned Nicholas Petitfrère, okay?
Yes.
And this has been a theme that we've looked at, is with two themes coming together. The older players in college football, college sports in general, you can win. It gives you a chance if you have good older players who are experienced. Now, I'm going to read off University of Tennessee's projected starting offensive line. I don't know these guys. I'm just going off of a website, Vols Wire. Something I just Googled it. You tell me if this could be the starting line, okay? Cooper Mays, okay. Ollie Lane, Javontez Spriggs, Andre Carrick, John Campbell. That possibly, right? Those are projected starters. Does that sound right?
Pretty good, yeah.
Okay. Every one of those guys is older than J.C. Latham.
Wow.
Every single one of them. And Ollie Lane, who is a six-year senior,
okay,
is 3 months younger than Nicholas Petitfrère, who is in his third year in the NFL. So Nicholas Petitfrère turns 25 on September 15th. So he's coming up on his 25th birthday. Ollie Lane will turn 25 before the season is over, if Tennessee's having a good season. December 29th is his birthday. So my point is, Nicholas Petitfrère. Well, yeah. Well, what I'm saying is, we can't assume that Nicholas Petitfrère is a finished product who should be written off. I'm still hoping that he has time, especially with Bill Callahan, to turn into something. And I'm with you that you have to have major skepticism. We will, until it's fixed, of the right tackle position. But I think people are like, well, Petitfrère, we know what he is, but he's younger, or he's the same age as a lot of college football offensive linemen who haven't even been drafted yet. So I just think that's something to keep. Like, Skoronski's only 22. Latham won't even turn 22 until after the season is over. That's way younger. So I think there's still room to grow with these guys.
And we're in an era with the final year of the COVID year, the bonus year, but
right.
Offensive linemen were sticking around college for an extra year or two instead of coming out early. You're mentioning the guys that did right before all of that hit and during all of that craziness. But you draft the young player to develop and then you cash in, so to speak, in year two, year three. And really, I mean, with Petit Frere, I mean, he's injured. He's suspended for gambling. Then he's hurt. I mean,
he's had a long history. A lot of his colleagues are still playing college football.
Yes. And you mentioned the Tennessee line. I mean, three of those dudes, Mays, Campbell, and Spraggins, have a combined 126 games and 95 starts.
It's unbelievable.
The Titans would love to have that that cohesion right now in a group that hasn't logged a single snap in the regular season together. So, yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at the depth, Willie. Petit Frere is going to be the guy based on what I've – it doesn't even have to practice for all I care based on what I saw today. Again, one practice.
So you think he will end up being the guy if he's physically okay?
Yes.
He'll win that job.
And let's also say if J.C. Latham has looked really good. I mean, he's started camp the way you want and the way they needed and had to have their left tackle start camp, as Mason just pointed out. But imagine if there was a question there, you know, and how dire of a situation they would be in. They've got the left side anchored down. They need to focus on what's happening at right guard and right tackle. And right now, again, pads are on. You know, we always say wait for the pads. Now we say wait for the Seattle Seahawks to get here for the joint practice, because that's whenever things went and turned south for Dylan Radins, for instance, his rookie year.
Yeah.
Right now, I don't think it looks very good. Petit Frere needs to get in and get some reps with Bill Callahan. And that's coming this weekend, I believe.
No question. Okay, Hutt, thanks for joining us. Excellent stuff as always. We'll see you on the practice field. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday.
Yes, yes, and I'll bring the pina colada for D-Mace sideline next time.
That sounds like a pretty good idea.
Yeah, hey, I'll take it.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Jonathan Hutt and Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. When we come back, we will hear a little bit later this hour from Will Levis, his thoughts after today's second practice in pads with the Tennessee Titans. This is Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. Willie and D-Mace, brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 and up and in Tennessee to bet. So, D-Mace, what do you think of my stat today of the offensive line for University of Tennessee? The average age, at least, I shouldn't say the average age, every one of them is older than J.C. Latham. This is sort of the nature of college football. This is nothing disparaging about Tennessee. Mm-hmm. This is a strength for the University of Tennessee. But I say it because the offensive line for the Titans is going to be very young, because two first-round picks, as talented as they are, they came out of college at a young age, 21.
21, 22, both of them.
Way
right
younger,
now.
Way younger. Like, Skoronski's in his second year and is still a couple of years younger than Ollie Lane, for example, who is, you know, one of those six-year college players who took advantage of the COVID rules, who has played a million college games. Mm-hmm. So just to put it in perspective, I still think there's a lot of room to grow with these guys. So I'm not expecting superstar Bruce Matthews level play from day one. And so I'm not going to worry if they struggle for a little bit. I'm hoping to see the signs of what could be a really special offensive line in a year or two. It's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, I don't think this offensive line, what people are going to see, and I forget who I was talking to on the sideline today. It might have been Brad. That I believe the defense is going to.
You're saying Brad Hopkins?
Yeah,
just
Brad
for
Hopkins.
People that don't know. Yeah.
I think the defense will start off like fast. I think they will have to carry this offense somewhat, but then I think after maybe a quarter of the season, I think the offense which means, what, 4 or 5 games, I think the offense will really start to pick it up and kick it in gear. And I think you will see closer to the finished product than not. There's still a bunch of moving pieces on this team from an offensive standpoint. So this offensive line, they're going to start off slow, which means the team is going to start off slow, the offense. Now, if the, for whatever reason, the offensive line, once they start playing preseason games and these, scrimmages with other teams, they got Seattle. If you start to see then that they're picking it up, I think that speaks to, one, Bill Callahan, but then that speaks to the guys, you know, willing to put in the work to expedite, you know, this process, because this team will only go so far, as we've seen. So I'm not telling you anything you don't know. This team will only go as far as this offensive line will take them. We've seen them have really good defenses, and their offense had, the offensive line hadn't been good. And what has happened? The team hasn't been good. If this team gets back to offensive line play that they had 3 years ago, then this team is a formidable team. This team is a playoff caliber team. If this line doesn't figure it out, then you will see the same things. I don't care who they added. You will see the same things you saw over the course of the last two seasons. Inept offense that can't pass protect. They got to run the football. And when I know you got to run football, you ain't getting many yards. So as this offensive line go, this young offensive line, especially on the left side, as this offensive line go, this team will go. That's why they need to figure out very quickly what they have on that right side. And you can't figure it out in its totality because Nicholas hasn't practiced yet. And it seems like he won't be practicing at least for the next couple of days. I know they mentioned something about this upcoming Friday.
Yeah, and these next 2 days, you know, are not going to be big featured days because, as you've heard Brian Callahan talk about, they gear up for a couple of days, then they gear back as they build. It is a different approach. Trying to stay healthier, avoid the pulls, the soft tissue stuff. Does it give you hope that Nicholas Petit-Frere is in his third year, yet he is the same age as six-year seniors in college, some six-year seniors in college football? Does it give you hope that he has still got room to grow?
Yeah, it does, but, you know, grow to what?
Well, that's the problem. He's had issues that some of them shot himself in the foot with the gambling thing. The injuries are there. Can he stay healthy? But, you know, he played as a regular starter at age 22. Uh-huh. Right, turning 23, he's about to turn 25. So to me, I'm trying to hold out some hope that he could be. I don't know if he's going to be great, but could he give them a solid season and be a piece going forward? This team desperately needs victories like that in their lineup, so they don't have to plug 50 holes on their team. They need some guys who develop within and become pieces they can use, so they don't have to go fix everything in free agency.
Yeah, they don't have to siphon somebody else's roster.
Yeah,
just to get
or go find somebody
starting,
off the street and hope that they can turn
left a starting right tackle on this team. When they get Nicholas back, hopefully it's sooner rather than later, then you hope that everything starts to come into form, because it seems like Dylan Raitens is doing okay at the guard position to the right side. Now you need to find that right tackle. And if Nicholas is the guy and he can show you he's the guy when he comes back off his injury, then great. But the problem is we won't know until he gets out there, you know?
Raitens is another one that got absolutely skewered and carved up early as a bust. But to his credit, he does get a little bit, seems like to me, he gets a little bit better each year, still developing. He's only 26. Right? He is just turned 20. So this is age 26. So is he a finished product? Probably he's getting close to it at this point. But can he take another mini step forward and be a serviceable guy that is borderline starter, solid backup? That all of these things are, you take this in these drafts we've been talking about, that you're looking for anything. You're in a desert. You look at these last few drafts and you're going, golly, these drafts look empty. Can I get something?
But he needs to develop into a starting guard, a solid starter.
That would
guard.
Be nice.
He need that's what so he needs you, to develop.
You hope he's better than Brunskill, basically.
Exactly,
right?
Because Brunskill is aging out, and you need someone that can either someone younger that can either be your starter now, or as Brunskill, you know, sort of segues out and as he gets older, you need someone that can slide into that guard space and you not lose any momentum at that position. So they're hoping that I'm sure they are in their room. Like, you know what? We hope Dylan Raiden's really do take hold of this guard position because he's a younger. Okay. He's just younger.
Look, let's dream for a second.
Yeah.
Petit Frere turning 25 this year. Mm-hmm. Raiden's 26. Cushenberry still 26. Mm-hmm. Skoronski 22. Latham 21. In your dream, that could be your five for a while, right? And the chemistry we know gets better the more you play together. So let's dream for a second. That would be the ideal scenario, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. You know, you
it may not be perfect this year, but you would see some dividends down the road.
But you got all these guys. You got young guys that have room to grow, but it's how much room is it? You know. And you're looking at – and the main two guys, obviously, are Dylan Raiden's and Nicholas. Those are the two guys that you want to see grow into their role on this team as a starter, whether it be at guard or at right tackle. So if you can get that, that's the ideal starting because all these guys are young and you just – barring injury, you figure these guys will be together at least 3 years. But – we got to see it, and these guys got to show it. You know, us talking about it, yeah, it's great, but you got
to
show
it. We're just dreaming it. They have to do it. All right, when we come back, we'll hear from the quarterback. Will Levis spoke to the media after practice today at Titans training camp. You're listening to Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. Willie and D-Mace continues here on 102.5 The Game. Coming up at 1 o'clock, if you're a Vanderbilt baseball fan, pay special attention, but if you're a baseball fan in general – Pedro Alvarez is going to join us at 1 o'clock. Sounds have a promotional event coming up, a home run derby. So you're going to want to hear what he has to say, but we'll go down memory lane a little bit with one of the first huge breakthrough players that Tim Corbin recruited at Vanderbilt, Pedro Alvarez, who was a high first-round pick with the Pirates, won a National League home run title back in the day. We'll catch up with him in a few minutes, but first, let's hear from Will Levis. He took the podium after practice today at Titans camp.
Court, I guess a lot of pressure periods of light. How much does that help? How do you think you guys have done in those situations?
Oh, it's great. I mean, working on our different answers versus different fronts and different looks and just coming back to them. And I feel like we've done a good job of not making the same mistake twice and picking them up after we've seen them. So it's like a game week when you're able to go through the pressure tape and dial in on what you're doing on all these looks. We're kind of getting to the point where we've kind of built that log of what we've seen against our guys, and it's good to see the progress we've made as of now.
We talked to Nick today, and he said, you know, out of these padded practices, the three veteran receivers, maybe particularly Tyler, brought so much back information-wise out of the practices to him and to you. Can you tell us a little bit about the kind of things they're bringing out of the practices that are then applicable?
I think we've gotten just a lot of reps already against these guys. Not just the padded practices, but being able to see how they're playing outside, the leverage that what they're playing with, and how that can affect, you know, the tops of their routes a little bit. Whereas before, you know, they might have tried a couple of things that I wasn't really ready for, whereas now we've talked about it, and they can be a little more sure about the location of the ball and where they're going to be. So that along with, you know, getting the pads on in the run game stuff, all the responsibilities in the run game, being able to really get in there and dig out who they need to, and knowing when they have to do their responsibilities with seeking out or what have you. So they've done a good job on both ends, the run and the pass game. It's good that we're finally starting to play some real football.
Along those lines, do you feel like today was a sharper, cleaner day for you guys than maybe yesterday was?
Oh, 100%. I mean, we just, from an operations standpoint alone, we still can't, you know, first time on the call-up period, first time in this whole camp where we didn't have our script and defense didn't know what defense they were running, and it was just kind of call it. And, I mean, just start with the, you know, 5-yard penalty, first and 15. It's not a great way to, you know, get that started. Other than that, I felt like we were pretty clean. Yesterday, a lot of false starts and, you know, huge center exchanges that just can't happen. And looks like today it's a good job getting back on track and getting things more solid.
Nick was mentioning some things. You saw this year here in the offseason that you would throw the ball away sometimes or instead of trying to jam it into a wide receiver, which you said he saw maybe sometimes last year in clips or early in the offseason, is that a conscious effort, you know, on your part to maybe do that a little bit?
Yeah, it's both. Like I had one today in the red zone where I know I'm not getting hit, and I was kind of in between one of those throwaway or try to jam it in there on like a redirect. You know, it's just that I'm going to go back and watch it. Maybe I would have wanted to throw it, but if I'm not sure, just learning to throw it away. And also having confidence in my arm at the same time. So it's a fine line, and I'm going to keep pushing the ball, keep taking those shots, and figuring out what my limitations are.
Well, was there anyone who's maybe surprised you, a free agent or a rookie, who you're either building chemistry with really fast or seems to have picked up the playbook quickly at this point?
I'm giving love to Lloyd up front. Like, he's just done a good job carrying those dudes and taking everything from Bill from the meetings and bringing it into any period that we're doing. Just doing a good job getting the calls out and helping me with the protection and everything. So there's a lot of guys I could name, but you know, he's been the leader for those guys up front, and we're lucky to have him.
How do you feel about the competition on the right side of the line? Is that something that's tough for you to adjust to, knowing that there's going to be some bodies that have gone in and out while you're in there?
No, I think it's more of a feel thing. Like, you can't play the game depending on who's in the game. You got to just feel out as the plays come in, like, where your space is. And as we get more film on our guys and who we know are going to be starting, it's more likely who we're going against and their pass rush technique, where I might know where my, you know, pockets are. But it's good for them. They know that, you know, there's competition, and it's pushing them every day. And we're excited to get Nick back too and work him in there. And but proud of how those guys have worked.
Well, when you have three guys who are viable number one receivers, like, how do you go about that process of making sure that everybody wins?
Yeah, especially during camp, like, you want to spread the ball around, and you want to give guys love and show them that you have confidence in them and trust in them, and that you're going to be coming to them with the ball. It's also on our, you know, play callers and everyone on the staff to script things for certain guys and getting it communicated to me or the other quarterbacks what we're really trying to get done with this play. You know, like, there's a situation today where, you know, first and long, trying to pump a go ball down the field when we can just get ourselves to a manageable second down situation, but that's just because I want to work on that with Calvin, and being able to complete those down the field are going to be big for us. So I'm going to keep coming at guys. I'm going to keep pushing the ball, but also got to do a good job of understanding situations, especially once we get into these call-up periods and starting to play the game more game-like.
Is it tough to take that mindset of, I'm going to just throw it to the open guy, as opposed to, like, I know I can trust Hop, I'm going to just give him the ball? Like, is it tough to adjust to that?
Yeah, it's probably not the best to have that mindset, I'd say. You really just want to find the open guy. But it might be a thing like, hey, if it's not wide open, I got whoever on a backside dagger that I really want to work this. And it might let you get your progression a little faster. But in a game, it's a different thought process. But when we're in camp or 7-on, stuff like that, where we can kind of experiment with that, that's the time to do it.
What's the process been like of developing the rhythm with Calvin, especially because he's so quick in and out of his breaks, maybe more than anybody out here?
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, we just got to keep working. I think especially just the balls down the field, it would be really cool to see us start connecting more on those, judging his speed and talking about him holding space out there and being able to either run underneath it or separate from the defender. But yeah, he's so dang fast. Like, sometimes you got to throw a ball a little differently to, you know, get him right.
So one-on-one, so you're just chucking it to Calvin. Is that you throw him as hard as you can, or just kind of what is the timing on those?
It's three and a hitch, and it's 50 yards down the field. So it's not a lot of guys that you have to take three and a hitch and then throw it 50. So, yeah, like, we have different ways that we're going to be trying to attack that, and we just got to hone in on them and work on them more.
That's Will Levis at the podium today after Titans practice. Again, I hear the same theme, D-Mace. A lot of self-evaluation, even when he's talking to the media. You can tell that he's kind of anxious to get out of there and then go in and go back through it and look where he can get better. He's got the right mindset.
Yeah, he does. He talked about not making the same mistakes over again, about he and the wide receivers being on the same page. And I know it's not just the wide receivers, but it's, you know, the tight ends, He talked about Cushenberry, him being that guy for him, him stabilizing things up front, him being able to call out certain things. When you're center, and I think that's what made Ryan Tannehill so good because of Ben Jones and what Ben Jones was able to do from the center position, him calling out protections and making sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to do, calling out the fronts. That's a responsibility that, you know, Ryan Tannehill didn't have to sort of deal with a lot because Ben was basically his other set of eyes, and he trusted Ben. And that's where, you know, Will Levis wants to get with Cushenberry Lloyd, and he talks about that. So just looking at some of the things he said, you know, they need to be sharper and cleaner, which they were today. You know, those are things that you want to hear from your young quarterback. That, listen, these are things that are being said after practice. These are things that are being said during practice. We all are trying to get on the same page here. We all are trying to figure out the small things. Even with the defense, we're trying to figure out what they do so then we can, you know, run our offense more efficiently. He said today there was no script, so the defense didn't know what we were doing. The offense, you know, we knew what we were doing, but the defense didn't. And it seemed to work a lot better. Well, if you can get it like that constantly, then you're doing something as an offense. You're progressing as an offense. So, and it seemed like today was a good day for them.
When we come back, we'll talk a little baseball. Pedro Alvarez, Vanderbilt Vandy boy, legend, if you will. This was before they were called the Vandy boys, but Vanderbilt Commodore, third baseman, and Pittsburgh Pirate, 9 years in the big leagues. Pedro Alvarez is involved with a big promotion that the Sounds are doing called Home Run Derby X. We're going to tell you about it. Catch up with Pedro next here on 102.5 The Game.